This is Cincinnati Edition. On 91.7 WVXU, I'm Michael Monks. Local fashion designer Tessa Clark was on the recent season of TV design competition Project Runway, where she made it to the final five. Now back home in Cincinnati, Clark is part of a burgeoning local fashion scene that includes one group working to make more resources available to local designers. Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss are Grind and Glaze founder and creative director and Idlewild woman, sales and marketing manager and buyer and merchandiser, Tessa Clark. Welcome back, Tessa.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Awesome. And we're also joined today by So Valley co-founders Rosie Kovacs and Shayla Maynard. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Okay, our number is 513-419-7100 if you've got questions for these local designers and entrepreneurs about their new project, or if you've got some gossip or some tea you want to spill from the season of Project Runway, maybe Tessa will be able to share some juicy juice. So, Tessa, you had quite a run on Project Runway.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised with how far I made it.
Yeah, I want to hear about that. How do you feel about how you did?
I'm really proud with how I did and how far I made it. I made so many good friends from the show. And I really, my takeaway from the show is that I feel validated as a designer and where I pull my inspiration from. My strongest looks on the show were inspired by my upbringing and definitely lended themselves back to Grind and Glaze and my inspiration for my brand.
You were on Cincinnati Edition prior to that season going on to television.
Yeah.
And we talked about your style and your design and all that and how the rustic upbringing that you experienced mm-hmm. inspired a lot of that look. But how did it feel presenting that to a national audience, particularly to an audience that's so interested in the work?
Right. It felt good. I had a lot of really great positive feedback. In general, as a minimalist designer, I think my designs tended to read a little flat on the runway comparatively to a lot of the other designers who were very extra and out there and lots of bells and whistles and details. And so in that sense, at some points during the show, I didn't feel understood as a designer. But in talking with judges on the runway and Christian behind the scenes afterwards, I definitely feel validated in my abilities and in my design sensibilities.
So you get the sense from the people who matter in the production that what you're doing is right.
Yes, absolutely.
So that, I guess that's kind of what I want to know is you're on this big national stage and this well-known platform, and you have sort of a Midwest inspiration mm-hmm. to the look of your designs, and you're maybe going up against people who are thinking about New York or international places. And how did it stack up? Was that intimidating to you?
It was definitely intimidating. I feel like in general, as a sustainable, eco-friendly designer and as a minimalist designer, my clothes are meant to be timeless. And I tend to, we talked about this previously, I tend to shy away from a lot of trends. Whereas maximalism is a trend right now. And
tell us what that is.
So just like everything but the kitchen sink, you know, just like throwing everything at a garment or a design. But I think in general, and Christian, when I, you know, was chatting with him, you know, in the workroom and stuff, he liked, I think, that I could pare back and remove something. And I think that that's important. And, you know, they don't show everything on TV, but all the designers in the workroom, we really collaborated and we gave each other great feedback and they pushed me and I helped them pare back. And it was a really, truly collaborative effort in general. Even though it was a competition, we all really liked each other. And my next collection that I've designed that's being produced by So Valley has a lot of color, which I got a lot of slack for on the show for not using more color. So I learned from my experience too.
Yeah, that was absolutely my next question, was what you learned and how we'll see that reflected. So we'll see some more color in the work that comes out of your mind.
Yes.
So let's just talk about, in general, reality television and what the experience was like, because they don't put everything on TV and they're following you around a lot and they're cutting it up into hour-long episodes.
Right.
So how did you feel you were portrayed when the production came out? I guess if you can't comment on that, because I know you still have some rules you have to follow from Bravo, were you surprised at how the storylines went?
No, not. I mean, somewhat, yes. I felt misunderstood in general by a lot of viewers and somewhat by designers and producers. But that's like just, you know, typical high pressure show production. But I was definitely portrayed as, you know, the more of the villain on the show.
Is that how you feel? You feel like you're the bad girl?
I do, yeah. But I also know that I tend to have a fairly, especially in a competition setting, abrasive personality. And I think that that was probably easy to portray as that. But in general, for the viewers who have seen the show, all the designers and I, we really like each other.
Yeah.
And in general, it was a really fun experience. I've never laughed so much in my life. Psychologically, it was a lot.
So being on a national reality show, and obviously the nature of reality show is that so-and-so is getting eliminated every week. You know, somebody's going home. How did that feel? What type of anxiety did you feel each week knowing that, gosh, you could be knocked off this thing at any moment?
Real anxiety for sure. It was definitely like stressful. Elimination days were high stress, high tension, very on edge for everyone.
Yeah, because you said you all got along and you like everyone, yeah. But come on, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, I really hope it's one of them,
right?
Or not me.
Yeah,
right?
And it was really sad when someone would go. I mean, we would cry. I mean, when my like best friend Lila Orr from the show, when she was eliminated, I lost it. It was the first time I cried on the show, and you know, so in that sense, it was. It was very real. The emotions were tense and on all fronts.
You almost made it to the finale. I guess you got up,
yes,
right to the episode just before,
yeah,
where you were finally knocked off the show. And
yep.
God, I mean, how did it feel?
I feel like being the first one eliminated and being the last right before finale, worst positions to be in. But I was really proud of my final look. And I had great feedback, you know, off camera from Christian and other producers that they really liked what I created, and in general, great feedback. And, you know, in that sense, I felt like I left the show in a positive light.
And you're a graduate of UC's DAP design program. And,
yes.
And you have some enterprises here in town. And before we bring in our other two guests who are here to talk about a really cool venture going on here in the West End, I'm curious what you specifically see as Cincinnati's possible role in the national fashion conversation.
Yeah. So recently I attended a sustainable fashion initiative at DAP. One of their speakers came in, and she's a podcaster, Omandi, and she, Rachel Omandi, and she spoke on how she thinks that there is room for the Midwest and for Cincinnati to be a hub for fashion. It's not going to look the same as New York or LA, but there's definitely room for that here, especially with an award-winning design school here. And now that Soe Valley exists, they can cater to graduates wanting to start their own brand and business here. And I think that there's room for that here, especially with it being such an affordable city to live in.
So let's talk about Soe Valley. The co-founders are here, Rosie Kovacs. Hi, Rosie.
Hello.
And Shayla Maynard. Hi, Shayla.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Well, tell us what it is. What is Soe Valley? Let me let the listeners know that Soe is S-E-W, as in a needle pulling,
yes,
thread, right?
Correct.
So we're talking about fashion.
Yes,
Soe Valley.
Yes.
Tell us what it is.
So Soe Valley exists to help entrepreneurs, designer entrepreneurs, gain resources to help build their brands. We do a lot of things there. We are a nonprofit, 501c3. Started in 2017. And we have a couple of different pillars. So one of our biggest focuses that are to help designer entrepreneurs is our contract services. So we do things from sourcing, prototyping, sample making, and then a small batch. So we sort of try to position ourselves in the marketplace to help designers find a place to produce things at small batch. And small batch kind of means a different thing to a lot of different people. But just to give you a number, it's anything from 10 to 100 per style. So a lot of times designers starting out have to order 300 of one style. But we'll do
So what you mean is like if somebody designed a shirt and they only needed 25 of it, that we'll small batch. Yeah. And you'll be able to do that.
Exactly. Exactly. And we help people who just have ideas. They aren't necessarily designers. They come to us with ideas for something they've been sitting on for years, and they will help them navigate the process and the system and figure out what their design really is and if it's a viable product. We're working on a lot of development in our educational side, too, to help them navigate that instead of just focusing on production. We are hosting workshops, seminars, info sessions, classes to help them gain their own skills so that they don't have to put as much investment up front monetarily to help them succeed.
So how does that work exactly? If someone's not a designer and they want to get into the business somehow, what type of person is that? What are they usually looking to do?
Well, there are a lot of those people out there, and I'd say most of our clients are new budding designers. A lot of them haven't gone to design school, but they have great ideas and sketches. So they come to us, and then we work with them to develop their ideas work with them step by step from sample making, prototyping to get into production. But we also do host a free info session every other month called From Idea to Product for these types of people that gives an idea on what it takes to turn your idea into a product and what it means to work with a production facility such as So Valley to make it happen, because there are quite a few steps that go into the process.
And all this is happening in a historic old warehouse here in Cincinnati's mm-hmm. West End, where a lot of stitching has been going on for quite some time. We're going to talk about that. I want to hear the story behind how you landed there.
Sure.
And that is coming up. We'll continue our discussion on So Valley in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, and we continue now with Grind and Glaze founder and creative director and Idlewild woman, sales and marketing manager and buyer and merchandiser, Tessa Clark. She's a recent fifth place finisher on the most recent season of Project Runway. And we're also joined by the co-founders of So Valley, Rosie Kovacs and Shayla Maynard. Join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments, questions, tweets. Get those into the show as well. So Valley, S-E-W, Valley, is operating out of an old building here in the West End. It's the U.S. Flag Building. How did that happen?
So they're called the National Flag Company.
My apologies.
Oh, no worries. Rosie and I
They've only been around 150 years. How am I supposed to know?
I feel like a lot of people don't know they exist. I didn't know they existed until we toured their facility, which is how we came to start renting from them. We toured it because we were curious to see how they had their manufacturing facility set up, learn who they were hiring, and just see what other sewing manufacturers were doing in the city before we were really getting going with this project.
So this is a big space, though. Talk about that. Talk about what's in there and why you needed that.
Yeah, it actually was set up perfectly. They were using their basement first ground floor to repair old flags. And we had huge cutting tables already set up for us. They had machines down there. The electric work was already there. And we actually have members who are part of our space. And the facility itself is laid out such that it has bays for those members to have studio spaces, which is where Tessa has her small studio. So the facility itself was just laid out perfectly for it. And then we have, of course, the relationship with them upstairs. We go up all the time. We contract with them, and it's been just a great symbiotic relationship.
I like the symbolism of the American flag. I mean, there's no better accoutrement of patriotism than the actual flag, because it sort of lends itself to the conversation that we're having about making clothes here in America, specifically here in Cincinnati. And we had mentioned before our first break this idea of small batch design, where you're creating a limited number of a certain style. And we're seeing more of that hit the market. Why do you think we're seeing more of that now?
Well, I don't know if we really are. I mean, I guess there are other brands that are coming into the mainstream who are trying to make it work.
I guess what I'm asking, and maybe this is just anecdotal, then, and Tessa, perhaps you can help me out here. You know how Facebook targets your ads? Okay, well, I'm a big shopper, right? I'm a big shopper.
Sure.
I'm getting flooded with ads from brands I'd never really heard of. And because I'm curious, I'll click, I'll look around. Of course, that only means more ads are going to be flooding the more I interact with them. But they're like these small shops out of various cities all across America. And that's the story you're getting from this. We're a small batch, independent, you know,
design company. Well, I think the internet has really allowed a lot of young designers to show their work. You know, Instagram, Facebook, it all started from there. That's how I got started originally. So that gives a platform to speak directly to your customer. And when you can speak directly to your customer and get immediate feedback, it really helps drive sales. And so it gives the younger designer a much easier point of entry into the market.
And Tessa, we had talked about this during your previous appearance about the cost of clothing and the real challenge for some of the clothes that are probably facing some of the designers who are working out of Sew Valley is that because of the labor that's involved, a lot of, I mean, fewer hands certainly touching the product, the cost of the materials, that means that the final product costs more than what we may be used to when we go into name brand big box store where we can find deals. So how, I guess, do we as a culture start to learn about the importance of supporting that type of industry and the local artisans who are creating these looks?
I think just in general, buying less.
Yeah, totally. Buying less, asking questions.
Yeah, you had mentioned that before. Like, we don't need to walk into the store necessarily, you're saying, and leave with bags and bags and bags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just buying less and choosing well and choosing something quality.
When you're shopping, ask questions.
Yeah.
Where did it come from? What's it made of? Will it last? How does it launder?
Right. And I think buyers for stores and boutiques here in Cincinnati and worldwide need to start asking their brands, where are your things made? You know, why is this so inexpensive? Let me make sure that the people who made it are paid fair wages. Mm-hmm. Let me make sure that they have proper sustainability efforts and practices in their facilities, which Sew Valley is working on tremendously, their sustainability efforts and waste. And I think that that's just – it's all of our jobs, and that's a sustainable practice in itself, symbiotic as a whole. You know, that's what makes something sustainable. So asking questions as a consumer and also as – a buyer, if you're a buyer for a store.
And also as a brand, transparency is really important. And putting out there what you're doing just makes it more normal in general.
Yep.
Showing people your facilities, who's making your clothes.
Yep. Absolutely.
And Sew Valley is removing barriers, it sounds like, for entry into the market for some of these newer designers. Talk about the cost. Well, sure. We'll talk about the costs that are associated with somebody who's got their first design, they're ready to manufacture that first look.
Sure.
What are the costs that they may be looking at without something like Sew Valley and then with something like Sew Valley?
We can use something from mine as an example if you want to.
Well, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I would say to start with, it depends on where you are in your process. You could be starting completely from scratch and not even have designs, or you could come to us with patterns that you've already had made. Regardless, you still have to have a sample made, and that will be $45 an hour with us. Anything that's considered pre-production is $45 an hour, and we give you an estimate based on a very in-depth consultation that we have with you that is for free. So we will give you an estimate what we think your minimum and maximum might be to develop that style. How many styles do you have?
For my upcoming past collection?
Let's say for your initial collection.
It was I had 8 styles. I paid about $225 to $300 for a sample for one for pre-production costs. Mm-hmm. And then the bridge top, for example, you ended up charging me 29 a top, or, mm-hmm. or I think we calculated it, it needed to be 34 a top.
Mm-hmm. It changed because it there were issues with production. So
right.
after production, after we went through our first run, we reevaluated, stepped back, and then had to adjust the price accordingly.
Right.
And is that the wholesale price?
That is my cost, not including. So that's right. what I
that's
pay.
That's the production.
That's
cost.
Just to production. Yeah. That's just to sew it. So I pay $34 for a bridge top to be sewn up, and then I pay $10 a yard. I think it takes about a yard, maybe a little more, mm-hmm. For my fabric. And then I have labels, and I have thread, and I have my own time if I'm paying myself, which I don't. And then I double that for wholesale.
So,
and then I doubled that for retail.
Right.
So tell me how much that shirt, you're talking about a top for
a
woman, right?
Yes. It's a long sleeve top with an apron front, has long ties. I sell it retail for $275.
And so that's what I'm saying. So someone yep. might walk into a boutique and say, oh, this is really cute. Mm-hmm. I love this. And then see the sticker and think, oh, gosh.
Right.
But if they understood the nature of the process behind it.
The mm-hmm. process and competitively against other similar tops on the market for brands that I align my brand with. I could charge a lot less, but if I eventually want to wholesale, which I don't at this point, then my pricing for my store here in Cincy and the wholesale price for another boutique would be different. So even though I'm not wholesaling yet, I am pricing my things accordingly. If I sold only direct to consumer, my prices would be a lot lower, but I would like to eventually wholesale. So I price for wholesale.
So if you were a customer, you could take a shirt off the rack, divide it by four, and say, okay, that's what it costs to make that thing.
Approximately.
Yeah, and if it's $2, you should question it.
Okay. Yes.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That's an interesting way to look at it, because rather than just being a bargain, it may just be cheap.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if it doesn't bother you, then I think you should reevaluate your values.
Interesting.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And the equipment that you're using, you had to accumulate all this stuff somehow. I was looking
gosh,
on your
yeah.
site. I wish I could speak in any articulate way about what these machines are.
Yeah, we have some cute drawings on there.
Yeah, they're really adorable. But how did you accumulate all of it?
All over the place.
Yeah.
Rosie had a few.
I had a few that I initially donated. There were a couple that were in the space that National Flag graciously let us use. Tessa hooked us up with some a manufacturer in Dark County. Where
in Arcanum, Ohio.
Yeah. They're a denim
manufacturer. All-American clothing company.
Yeah. And they moved their location to Texas. They downsized. And there were machines just sitting in their warehouse. So we went up there, probably got about four or five, a couple of specialty machines that make just do one operation, just do buttonholes or just put on buttons. Things that we probably would have never been able to afford. So we found things like that.
Yeah.
And then just kind of sold and bought based on what was coming in the door. We kind of approached the whole thing with a strategy of start small, figure out who our customer is, figure out who is coming through the door and what kind of garments we were going to make, and then invest accordingly.
What do you see happening at Sew Valley down the road in terms of its placement as a place where people work?
Well, we're definitely not slowing down anytime soon. Our production team is growing. In terms of employees, our team is much larger than last year. Our demand, we're booked several months in advance. We get production inquiries almost daily now, which just proves that there actually is a need for production services in our region. It really does not exist, especially small batch. So I would just foresee us expanding our production as much as we can to accommodate the demand, as well as more space for members. Our educational courses are taking off. We've expanded. We're offering more specialized classes this summer and into the fall. So just we're hoping to grow and fit the needs of the community, which we've realized is there is quite a large need for mm-hmm. what we're doing.
You have a pretty interesting project coming up with the Cincinnati Pops.
Yeah.
We're really excited about that.
Tell us what that is.
So the Pops officially announced discreetly on Twitter maybe about a month ago that we are working with them to design and manufacture new jackets for all of their musicians to be debuted at their Holiday Pops concerts, which is December 13th, 14th, and 15th of this year. So we're going to be pretty busy.
Yeah, how many jackets is that?
It's about 150.
Okay.
Yeah.
And because it's a holiday show, are they're not traditional black tie jackets? They're going to be festive?
Well, you can't really talk about the design too much, but I can talk about the prompt.
Okay.
They definitely needed something that was much more mobile to move around in. The old jackets were stiff, and we looked at it from a different perspective, kind of more like an athlete, and getting them into garments that are movable and breathable. So it's been quite a challenge. Plus, there's such a variety of ages and body types, so we have to come up with a style for both a man and a woman that looks... Well, we have two styles, a man's look and a woman's look, but they have to fit and look good on a range of bodies. So.
How did this come about? Did they just put out like an RFP and mm-hmm. you exactly. responded? Is yep. that right?
Yeah. Yep.
So we responded with designs and suggestions, and they said, let's
do
it.
Us.
That's cool. What I like about you saying that they need to be able to move like athletes is we've been dealing right here in this neighborhood with sort of the artist community and the sports community with yeah. the soccer stadium and how they're all right. going to get along with the noise levels and all that. And now it sounds like it's blending perfectly. It's all on your shoulders to show exactly how the athletes and the musicians can get along.
Right.
All of you have some things coming up. Tessa, I know you've got an event coming up. What is it? I think you said it was sold out, though.
Yeah. So the event coming up is the Miller's Daughter Fashion Show fundraiser for Historic Bears Mill in Greenville, Ohio. That's this weekend. However, even though it's sold out, which is awesome because 100% of proceeds go to the mill, all of the one-of-a-kind runway looks that are created by myself and other Sew Valley members and all of my designer friends will be have an online auction up to a week after the show, open worldwide. And 100% of those proceeds for those pieces are going to keep Bears Mill open to the public. Also a 501c3 nonprofit.
And what's going on with Sew Valley? You guys have a couple of things?
Sure. So today from 2 to 6 p.m. we have Fabric Fest, which is a fabric rep called the Sourcing District is coming in from Chicago to show samples of thousands of different fabrics from various vendors around the world, trims, fabrics, any type of material you might need for your next project. And that material is not really available readily in Cincinnati. So it's a great opportunity to just come in or just get inspired and for your next project. The variety is vast.
He has super low minimums. So it's good for small projects.
Yes. For a really small batch.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. And better than paying retail at such like other big brand stores. So
well, it's all very exciting. And we'll be interested to watch how the production continues, and we'll keep an eye on it. So our thanks to Tessa Clark, Rosie Kovacs, and Shayla Maynard for coming in and chatting with
Thank
us about
you.
This.
Thanks
so
for
much.
Having us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.